BioShock, Part 7. I had underestimated how big this place was. The shelves and racks were full for the most part. Fontaine's crew probably wanted to travel light, so the stores themselves hadn't been looted. The place was still cold, as if someone closed off the unused areas to conserve power. I found a heavy winter coat to keep the chill away, keeping an eye out for splicers waiting to ambush me. The good news is that the building seemed splicer-free. Plenty of bodies, though. You'd think they'd be down to skeletons by now, but I figured the cold could probably preserve bodies down here indefinitely. Splicers that had probably died back during the war months ago looked like they could jump up and attack any second, were it not for the pale skin and, well, lack of breathing. It was a byproduct of plasmid use. Mark? Hello? Focus? Right. Elizabeth. Find the girl, then wipe away the debt. Wait, where the blue Hades did that come from? What debt? I didn't owe any debt to anybody down here, especially not something to atone for. I think spending all this time alone was doing something to my head. Instead of abusing my body with plasmids wasn't bad enough. Stop fucking about. Get to work. Find her. After 3 hours of searching, I made my way up to a place called the Manta Ray Lounge. This place looked like it once hosted one hell of a party, and the party was long since over, even though the lights were still on. It was the only sign of hope I'd seen since I came here. Everything else was dark and cold. Here, the lights were full, and I found it was comfortable enough to take off the heavy coat. There was a banner up at the front entry that said, "Welcome to the party, boys." I looked around at the well-to-do surroundings, the expensive-looking lights, the empty bottles of champagne, the bullet holes, the burns and cracks in the walls. Yeah, glad I missed this party. I was tired, hungry, thirsty, and starting to feel somewhat creeped out. At least with Rapture proper, there were the other voices. I looked down at the menu, oddly comforted by the clean plastic and artistic design. "He's certainly persistent, isn't he?" asked a male voice. Slowly, I looked up to see a man and a woman seated in the booth across from me, both of them dressed in turn-of-the-century fashion, same colored hair. In fact, they could be twins. I seriously considered wigging out at the sight of them, just simply being there across from me all of a sudden, but I was far too tired and seen way too much strangeness already. "Quiet. Man has a constitution of an Eustor horse," she glanced at me. "One also notes the lack of an extreme psychological reaction to our abrupt presence. Question suggests jaded or merely exhausted. Why not both? So close to this pivotal juncture, he does have a stake in this now, whether he wished it or not. And he certainly wishes it now." His voice trailed off at the sounds of both sets of my fingers drumming loudly on the tabletop. They turned to look at me casually, and I looked at them levelly. "He," I said quite firmly, "is getting awfully tired of being discussed while he is sitting here wondering who you two Fruit Loops are. So I don't care if you're real or really vivid hallucination. I think introductions are badly in need here." "You've stumbled into something beyond your experiences," she said. "Even more than you already have," he said. "Tell me something I don't know," I said. "My name is Rosalind Lutes. This is my brother, Robert."
"And you're both scientists with a connection to Elizabeth, right?"
Robert blinked.
"And how did you come to that conclusion?"
"Well, there's no blood on either of you, which means you've got your own ways of getting around without getting accosted. That takes brains. And you're connected to Elizabeth. Why else would you be here? And that indicates that you and she are not from here."
Rosalind was impassive.
"You are guessing."
"Yeah, but they're pretty good guesses, aren't they?" I smiled. I was actually starting to feel in control of a conversation for a change.
"Based on the clothes, not from this time period, maybe not even from this reality, judging from Elizabeth's reactions and yours."
"Word of warning, young Jacobs," Robert said.
"You're making risks into areas where your comprehension is extremely sparse."
"Please, I fell down this rabbit hole some time ago, so you'll excuse me if I need a little trial and error to navigate."
Rosalind was more insistent.
even if those doors open to realms you're ill-equipped to handle?
What do you expect me to do?
I heard a fist slam onto the table, and it was a moment before I realized it was mine.
People's lives are at stake here. People are dying or worse. And thanks to a capricious and uncaring universe, I get to be selected to be Rapture's champion. I never asked for any of this.
Neither of the Lutezes flinched, as if they expected that to happen. You may not have chosen your entrance, Robert began, but you have chosen your path, Rosalind continued, and you did not do it for reasons as lofty as saving Rapture, Robert added.
You did it for her, Rosalind said with a smile.
And you're still doing this for her, Robert finished.
I stared at the two of them. What is this? Are you two married or something?
They smiled.
Nothing so casual, they said in unison.
Okay, that was getting creepy.
I still want to know, why are you here?
In our usual capacity, Rosalind began.
We have found our purpose in instruction, Robert continued.
Guidance, direction, even causation of events.
However, this time, our purpose is much simpler.
I was probably staring at them.
It was like watching a game of verbal ping pong.
And that purpose is?
They both smiled playfully.
To distract you.
And that's when I felt the jab in my back, and everything went all funny on me, and my legs turned to wet noodles, and oh, hell.
This is me, unconscious.
Here at last. It can't be him. Can't be here. Can't see me like this.
Stop it. Stop it. Why did you leave? Why did you come back?
No way back. Too far gone. Not what he wants.
I heard her.
It was Elizabeth. I tried to move, but I couldn't. Opening my eyes was Herculean, but I managed. I was in some grand office. I had to hazard a guess. It was probably Frank Fontaine's back when this place was still connected to Rapture. Fine furniture, carpet was soft enough, trophies on the wall, phonograph playing in the corner. Place wasn't lit well at all. In fact, it was almost total darkness. I could still see shadows. I could see her. She was little more than an outline herself. She was wearing a dress, I think. Outline didn't show a lot of details or colors. Then my brain kicked in. Elizabeth saved her life by using Adam, but she was addicted to it now. And there were probably a few likely side effects to applying Adam directly to one's head. She still looked the way she did on her record. It'd be a minor miracle. So be prepared for anything, bucko. I must have made a sound because she stopped pacing, freezing in place.
Is he awake?
I can't. Booker, please, don't say that.
Why do you say such things?
It's not my fault.
He saved Sally. He's a good person, not like the others.
I had a feeling she'd go on like that for days, and I had to do something. I'd come too far.
Elizabeth? Is that you? Please, God, tell me I'm not too late.
Mark?
It was hesitant.
Is it you? Are you real?
Yeah.
What the heck did you hit me with? Feels like I'm on the waves instead of under them.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry.
She moved forward, clearly skittish even in this darkness.
I had to make sure you weren't, well, just something I dreamed up.
I smiled. It's okay. After what you've been through, I figured you'd be the careful sort. Took out a flashlight and saw her back up a few steps.
Elizabeth, wait. Please don't go.
Don't.
Don't look at me. I know what I look like. If you see me, you'll leave. You'll leave and you'll break your promise.
Elizabeth, please, let me look at you.
You won't want to.
Elizabeth. There was a very long moment before she moved over into the light. It took every effort I had not to react or be startled. Her face was almost a parody of what it was before. The right side of her face was almost flawless, but there was a massive series of growths and cysts that seemed like it was trying to engulf the entire left side of her face. She had long dark hair on the right side, but only tufts of hair in there on the other side. The left eye and the left side of her mouth drooped, and the side of her eyes was constantly weeping some yellowish fluid. The rest of her body had not escaped ravagement by the atom.
There were unnatural bulges scattered over her body, causing her right leg and foot to suffer some sort of elephantiasis. Adam, hard at work. She closed her eyes and turned away from me. Go ahead. It's all right, Mark. No one would think less. My next reaction was as instinctive as it was involuntary. I couldn't stop it. I knew there was no way I could have reacted any other way. I took her, Elizabeth, in my arms and I held her against me. I didn't care what Adam had done to her. She wasn't the Adam. The Adam, the woman who helped me through the horrible place, kept me alive, kept me sane, kept me from succumbing to despair. This was the woman I knew. And this was the woman I was falling in love with. Elizabeth, it's going to be okay. I'm here, I'm real, and I'm not going anywhere without you. I smiled slightly, although tranking me was a bit much. She started to shake in my arms, and I thought she was laughing. Then I realized she was crying. I rested my cheek against hers and lay back down, holding her in my arms. She didn't need to listen to me right now, that much I knew. Besides, I still felt groggy and weird. I figured I could use some regular sleep to get this drug out of my system. I looked at her face. Her eyes were closed, and she was smiling. Thank God. I found her at last. I was so glad to see her, I didn't even think about that weird tingling sensation in my cheek. When I woke up, I was alone. I didn't feel drugged anymore, so whatever Elizabeth had juiced me with, it was out of my system. I still felt lethargic, though. I must have slept for the better part of a day. Elizabeth! I got up quickly and looked around. I was still in Fontaine's old office, so that part wasn't a dream. Elizabeth! I called out, ignoring how spooky it was to hear our sound echoed in this empty place. Where are you? No answer. Okay, Mark, think. You just didn't appear in this office. There has to be a way out of here. I checked the office out. Private bathroom, closet, 4 safes. Jeez, no end to Fontaine's secrets. There we go. Elevator. And the car wasn't here, and I had to call it, which meant Elizabeth must have used it. But why would she leave? I took the elevator down and entered the lounge. No signs of life. For a few terrifying moments, I thought the Adam in her brain got things twisted around and now she was suicidal or something. For God's sake, how much more can this triple damn city take from me? I stopped, realizing I was hyperventilating again. Damn it, Mark, do not lose it here. Okay, clear your head. Do not panic. Take a few breaths. Calm down. If she's in trouble, you will be of no help to her like this. Elizabeth! I called out again. Still no answer. Okay, you don't know where she is. You know that there's no other splicers here. You know that supplies are scarce in this place and that she needs Adam constantly to get from getting worse. She probably went to get her next fix. Which means she'll be back. Which means running all over the place isn't going to do anyone any good if you know where she's going to be eventually. I sat back down in the lounge and looked around. Time to check in. Bridget, are you out there? Herr Jacobs, I have not heard from you in some time. I feared the worst. Yeah, well, you weren't far off. Have the other girls made it to safety? Yes, Tanka. You have been a much better guardian to them than I. I thank you for this chance to finding some way to help me atone for my sins. Wait, I have news. I was shocked. She actually sounded happy. I have studied the blood sample you've given me. Find anything good in there? Herr Jacobs, the plasmid I gave you to cure the little sisters has bonded with your DNA on a biochemical level that is simply unprecedented. It is capable of acting as a catalyst to undo the effects of the Adam in any person. Wait, what do you say? Your genetic background has proven to be the key to curing the effects of Adam in anyone. The effect literally feeds on the Adam, reconstructing and reconstituting the original genetic template before any splicing was done in the first place. She sounded a little giddy, which was actually coming off as a little creepy. Don't you see? You are the cure. Listen to me. No matter what happens, you must stay alive.
Within you lies the capacity to cure any splicer, healing them and removing them from Orion's pheromone control.
That meant... Elizabeth, if Tenenbaum was right, then she could have returned to normal. Exactly the way before she used Adam to keep herself alive. Oh, shit!
Doc, tell me something. If someone used Adam to recover from a fatal injury and the effects were reversed, would she still have the injury?
I do not know. Adam is notoriously capricious in its effects.
Talk to you later, Doc. I turned off the radio. I couldn't wait here anymore. Elizabeth might be dying of the head injury she sustained before she started taking Adam. I scoured the area, looking all over for her. No luck. Tried the obvious places first. Diner, clothes. Found one place called Cupid's Arrow that I hoped she wasn't in. Geez, so much for the rules of propriety. Anyway, I couldn't worry about that now. I swear, Elizabeth, if something happened to you because of this, I'll never forgive myself.
I turned a corner and stopped, coming face to helmet with a big daddy as I walked towards the toys department. For a minute, it looked at me, and I looked at it. We stared each other down. I was in no mood to deal with a big daddy at this point. I didn't even care if the lights turned red. Finally, I had realized I had better things to do. I stepped aside and let the big daddy go on his rounds, then passed him and walked into the toys department.
Elizabeth, I called.
Mark?
Oh, thank God and Jesus in heaven, she was alive! Elizabeth, where are you?
Am I dreaming, Mark? I've been asleep for a long time.
There was something odd in her voice.
Elizabeth, you're awake, I promise.
You promise.
I still couldn't see her, but I knew she was closer.
I knew a man once. A man who kept his promises. I knew him for a short time. He knew me when I was more... so much more. He was afraid of me, but he loved me so much. Even after he was gone, he guided me when I didn't know anything. Helped me understand. Showed me so many things, even more than the Lutesses.
I stayed where I was. Something was going on, and I didn't want to spook her.
When he left me the second time, I was alone. Alone with a monster who hurt me. Tried to stick a spike in my brain. Beat me and left me for dead. Then Sally came. She sang to me. Gave me Adam. Bit by bit, I healed, but I didn't recover. He came back again, but he was different. Malicious. Adam seeping into my brain, corrupting my thoughts and memories of him. Telling me I needed to die, to atone. I lost hope, but I didn't die. I became the monster my father and Comstock feared I was.
Heard something in my right and saw a shadow step out.
And then you came, like a prince from a fairy tale. Beauty and the Beast. Only I was the Beast. I spoke to you, I learned of you, and you would not stop, no matter what rapture threw at you.
I didn't think it was a good time to tell her how many times I nearly gave up the ghost, and I stayed silent.
Came through hell. You found me. And you loved me. You kept your promise.
She came forward, stepping into the light. She was dirty, smelled like she hadn't had a shower in weeks, clothes worn and torn, and she was perfect. Elizabeth smiled at me, all lesions and tumors gone. Her body was unmarred, although a large part of the left side of her head was nearly spear bald, revealing not even a scar.
I'm all yours, Mark Jacob. My life belongs to you.
She reached up and embraced me, kissing me again. But this was coming off as a little aggressive.
Elizabeth? Yes, my prince?
She smiled, and this was definitely a come-hither look.
I think I'd create a monster.
Elizabeth, can we slow down just a sec?
Why? There's no one else here around for miles. And you can do whatever you want.
Hey, whoa! I pulled back.
Hold your horses, lady. I'm not that kind of guy.
Are you saying that you don't want me?
She asked.
Holy crow, that pout.
Elizabeth, I don't know what's going on, but my decisions get made above my waistline and...
Wait a minute. She was smirking.
Smirking! You've been pulling my chain, haven't you?
Elizabeth laughed.
I'm sorry, the look on your face.
So much for my prince. Jeez, kick a guy when he's down, will you?
I'm sorry, I truly am. I just wanted to make sure your interest in me wasn't just physical, Mark.
A girl gets her hopes up, after all, and you wanted to make sure I wasn't going to take advantage of you. I sighed. I get the idea, but it was still a dirty trick.
Bitter experience, Mark. I was an innocent girl once. That was then.
She stood taller.
I'm my own person now, and I'm not some damsel in distress.
Yeah, no, you just cause it from time to time. I was smiling a little now, despite my injured pride. Okay, well, we're not lovers, but we're still friends, right?
Oh, I don't know. Play your cards right, handsome.
She looked down at herself.
That probably would have been more convincing with an improved appearance.
Yeah, go get showered and dressed. You and I have a lot of... I leaned against the door that had been broken aside, felt it shift, turned to look...
Holy creeping Moses!
I looked at the space behind the door and saw Elizabeth. Dead, broken, and impaled on metal rods within concrete.
What the bloody blue hell?
Elizabeth looked at me and gave me an understanding look.
As you can see, reports of my death have been greatly underestimated.
That's you in there!
But how?
Mark, it is a long story.
I'll make the time!
I backed away from the cold corpse. Are there any other little surprises?
Oh, you have no idea.
The rest of the day was spent on Elizabeth's life story, the deal made with Booker when she was a baby, the part of her left behind, growing up and isolated as the specimen in Columbia, the rescue by Booker DeWitt, her father, the discovery of the true nature of both Columbia and Elizabeth's abilities, the other songbird. Comstock and his true identity is Booker's opposite. Everything falling down as Booker submitted himself to destruction to stop Comstock and Columbia from ever coming to pass. It was hard to accept at first, but it made sense. And Elizabeth was some storyteller.
However, with my father's death, other versions of Columbia became apparent, with the Comstocks of those realities acting to preserve their plans. Some gave in and submitted willingly to oblivion or a change in their destinies. Others fought to preserve their own Columbias, some going so far as to kidnap those versions of me they could get their hands on.
Well, how do you even know about any of this?
I couldn't stop until all the debts were paid. One Comstock went so far as to kidnap one version of me, but instead of losing the tip of her pinky like I did, she lost her head. Comstock thought he could escape his crime by coming here to Rapture, assume his previous identity as Booker DeWitt, let himself forget, her face grow hard and unforgiving. But I wouldn't let that happen. I followed him, used Sally and his feelings for her to lead him away from where it was safe, and make him pay.
Oh, how did that lead to her? I nodded to the corpse.
Like all those wanting vengeance, I got careless. I never thought about what the Big Daddy would do to me once it was finished with Comstock. By the time I realized how much danger I was in, it was already too late. Or so I thought.
What happened?
I woke up. Only it was a different me. I no longer had the means to see and travel through tears, which meant that I was more vulnerable. I met with Atlas, Fontaine in disguise. I conned him into letting him think I could get him what he wanted in exchange for Sally.
Elizabeth chuckled slightly.
Didn't quite turn out the way I wanted.
Welcome to my world.
Tell me about you, Mark. I've been rambling on and on. I barely let you get three words in. I'm sorry, it's just been so long since I've talked to someone who wasn't a figment of my imagination.
In my defense, Elizabeth, I could listen to your voice read from the phone book.
Down, boy, she said with a smile.
Well, I'm not the tale teller you are, but I'll take a stab at it. Grew up in Iowa, got a scholarship to college. Engineering, of course. I can't remember a time when I wasn't taking something apart. Make it work so I was a natural. I first started out pre-med thinking I could be a doctor, but as it turns out, putting together people is not as enjoyable as putting together machines. College taught me the rest of things I didn't already know, and I got a job with a firm in London. Worked there for a year, made plenty of friends. Then I got a plane heading back with a man named Jack. Things went down from there. Literally.
I saw him. And you. I think I was dreaming. He was supposed to save us from Fontaine.
Yeah, well, plans change. He died, I survived. Don't feel sorry. I think you changed things when you survived. I don't know if I'd still be alive if the other one had been the one to survive.
Yeah, well, I probably wouldn't have liked not surviving a plane crash.
It's all about you, isn't it? I see this is a relationship that could use some improvement.
Now, she was smirking again.
You asked.
I went on about making my way through the Unwelcome Center, the Medical Pavilion, Neptune's Bounty, and Arcadia. I was trying not to sound embarrassed as I recounted how scared I was most of the time, but I figure if I made any embellishments on my story, she'd figure me out in a New York minute. She may have had the face of an angel, but those gorgeous blue eyes of hers were sharp, discerning. She was right about that. She was definitely no babe in the woods. Then I got to Fort Frolic, had the pleasure of meeting Sandra Cohen. Did some things there I didn't like doing, but I didn't have a choice.
Sounds to me like I'm not the one you're trying to convince of that, Mark.
I didn't answer there for a few minutes. If only I admitted to myself as well as her. Ever since I've come down here, I've had to fight for my life against crazy homicidal splicers. Then in Arcadia, I find out they're not really homicidal. They're just dancing to Ryan's tune, being made to kill. And the more I realize the magnitude of what's going on, the more like I feel that I don't really have a choice in what to do next.
What do you mean?
Remember that stuff Tenenbaum gave me to cure little sisters? Turns out it could cure regular splicers, like you, like the others. She acted like I was some kind of holy grail that could cure the Adam plague.
You can still choose. We could get one of those bathyspheres here, leave the sinking ship. We go to Paris, use the ship that's coming in 8 days.
Oh, you heard about that on the radio, huh?
Yeah, well, I can't do that.
Think I could leave all these people down here? With Andrew Ryan in charge? Let this insanity continue? Dangle the key to saving them in front of him and saying, ha ha, too bad, I'm going on holiday? I can't just leave them to them.
For the love of Mike, you did it to me again!
Elizabeth smiled triumphantly.
You just need to realize that you've already made the right choice. Not having a choice isn't the same as finding alternatives unacceptable.
Yeah, well, you're forgetting one thing. I may be committed to being stuck down here, but you're not. That threw off. And I had to admit a small sense of satisfaction seeing surprise on her face for a change instead of wearing it myself.
What?
I made you a promise, remember? You in Paris? That ship that's come here could take you there. You can use the records left behind to access Fontaine's accounts topside. I just need to fit one of the bathyspheres here with a scrambler attuned to the frequency Fontaine was going to use to escape, send you up, and you'll be free of this place forever. And I hated every word that came out of my mouth, but this place needed me a whole lot more than it needed Elizabeth. And God knows she has been through enough.
Well, what about you?
The next words out of my mouth were the hardest I'd have ever said.
What about me? You know what it's like down here. I can't leave now. In fact, I don't even know if I'll ever be able to leave. You've already served your time in prison and in war.
Then is anybody in this messed up city that deserves to go to Paris and get away from here? It's you.
Her smile softened.
Mark, that is the most selfless, honorable, gentlemanly gesture it has ever been my privilege to experience.
Well, I began, but she cut me off.
And the only way I can possibly respond is... fat chance.
Well, the way I see it, you've already...
Wait, what?
Let's be realistic, Mark. You need all the help you can get. I can help you get around in Rapture. Besides, you need someone to watch your back.
Admit it, Mark.
But...
no buts, Mark. Besides, even if I did throw caution to the winds and went to Paris, do you know what I'd be doing? Obsessing over what you're doing here. So Paris will just have to wait.
I stared at her.
You're nuts, you know that?
Crackers, around the bend, not in full possession of your faculties. The cheese fell off your cracker a long time ago. Bonkers, wacko, mad as a hatter, completely out of your mind.
From what I can tell, I'm in good company. There was that smile again, full of mischief, and something else I couldn't figure out.
And there's no way I'm going to change your mind, is there?
None whatsoever. Sighed. You are the most infuriating woman I have ever met.
Count your blessings. First time I met the man who turned out to be my father, I threw books at him. Thick ones.
All right, Elizabeth. You want to help? We need to overcome the first real issue, getting out of this place. The bathysphere Cohen sent me here and had barely enough air to keep me alive for the trip, and I'm sure he knew that. Two people coming back the same way would run out of air long before we hit the halfway mark. And he's expecting me to come back alive and bring back your corpse.
The corpse part is easy. She looked over at her doppelganger stuck in the wall. Gruesome, but easy.
You're awfully pragmatic when it comes to your own dead body.
Any anxiety I had about that cooled after the first 2 months. It's unnerving, but all it is now is a cadaver with a spooky resemblance. I'm me, not her.
I suppose so. All right, Elizabeth, time to go shopping. And I know just where they'll take my line of credit.
We entered the showroom for Bathysphere's Deluxe and looked around. Saw this place when I was looking around for you.
Wonder if they got any in my color.
None of these models will work. If Cohen sees you coming in one of these custom models, he'll be on his guard.
True. Which means we'll just need to modify the one that he expects us to be in. Try to find any CO2 scrubbers. I'm going to see if I can find any dental supplies here.
Dental supplies? What for?
Well, if Cohen starts getting nervous, we need an edge.
And I know just the thing.
Find what you can and bring it to the Metro Bay. We're going to give Mr. Sander Cohen a real surprise.
30 minutes later, I was at the Metro Bay and Elizabeth had a small pile of supplies. I had two tanks, low and large and one small, and an acetylene torch and some tools.
Perfect.
I can see the need for the scrubbers, but why dental supplies?
I held up the smaller tank.
Common tool in the dentist's office. Nitrous oxide, also known as laughing gas.
You're not going to try to gas Cohen, are you?
Hardly. The nitrous is going to be piped into the feeder for the inlet manifold.
Elizabeth figured out immediately.
Of course. When injected as a liquid into the inlet manifold, the vaporization and expansion causes a reduction in air fuel charge temperature.
Her hands moved as she visualized the reaction.
It results in an associated increase in density, thereby increasing the cylinder's volumetric efficiency, resulting in higher energy output.
She smiled broadly, then noticed my look and said, a small blush in her cheeks.
When you're stuck in a library for 17 years, you end up reading a lot about things like chemistry.
Hey, don't apologize for being smart. I started work on installing the tank. As I screwed the tank into place, I heard her say,
most men don't like women smarter than them.
Yeah, well, that's because most of those men are even dumber than they seem. I've met plenty of women smarter than me here. Hazard of having so many geniuses getting their golden tickets. I finished attaching the tank and looked up at Elizabeth.
You know, when I first got here, one of the people I ran into was Julie Langford. And it irritated me that she acted like I was pond scum because I was an engineer simply because she knew more than I did as a botanist.
I don't... Hear me out, Elizabeth. After a while, I saw all that happen in Rapture, and it's easy to look down on all these so-called geniuses who drove Rapture into the ocean floor. But then, after having to deal with splicers and big daddies and little sisters, I learned a very important lesson.
What's that?
I opened up the panel in the back of the bathysphere. Intelligence is relative. Wisdom is priceless. If you don't use what you've learned to do something right, you might as well have memorized train timetables. Give me a hand with the scrubbers, thanks.
You see, as smart as Langford was, she got suckered by Ryan and almost ended up a dead duck at the hands of his pet splicers, all because she knew botany, but she didn't know people as well as she'd liked. She became a whole lot friendlier after we survived the attack and brought Arcadia back to life.
I started work on increasing the capacity of the scrubbers when I noticed Elizabeth was looking at me funny.
What?
Exactly how much friendlier did she get, Mark?
I looked at her for a moment, then it hit me. She was jealous!
I cleared my throat and said casually,
you know, for an older dame, she really did keep her figure. I also didn't expect her to have nearly so much energy after what she'd been through. In fact, I mentioned to her after we'd been in bed together for, oh, I don't know how long.
Did she now? She asked, her tone decidedly frosty.
I chuckled and turned to her. Relax, Elizabeth. You're not the only one who could pull somebody's leg. And that's when she slapped me. Hard. You know, I've been kicked around by slicers, punched by big daddies, and nearly blown up. But that slap hit me harder than anything in Rapture had ever done. I looked up at her, but by the time I was looking at her again, she was stomping away from me. Hey, Elizabeth! Hey! I don't want to talk to you right now, Mr. Jacobs, so you'll excuse me if I leave the rest of the work to you. I watched her go, feeling like a big daddy had stomped the shit out of me. Mark, when are you going to learn? You can't go pull stuff like that. Remember, a woman can ask you a question, give you the answer, and you'll still be wrong. Let her cool off and apologize to her then. Yeah, she probably hates me. Well, can you blame her? Way to make a great impression, Mark. What are you going to do for an encore? Seduce Sandra Cohen? Just fix the bathysphere. Maybe she'll be more forgiving once you do something right. I didn't hear her come back for a couple of hours. I'd managed to boost the output of the engines, increase the oxygen capacity to allow for more than one person to make the trip, hopefully, and get the mix right for the nitrous. It was going to be risky. If I let the gas output for too long, the manifold gaskets would be turned into peanut butter. Mark? I was still getting used to the idea of someone else being around, so when I heard her voice, I was so startled, I drove my forehead into the bottom of the bathysphere. Ow! Ugh! I pulled myself out from under the sphere, ready to lay into her with all kinds of justified indignance at being treated the way I've been. And then I saw the look in her eyes, a face, a look of such loss. As soon as I saw it, every argument, insult, and word I had prepared to hit her with simply dried up in my mouth and blew away like leaves in a tornado. Are you okay? No. No, I'm not. She took a deep breath. I'm sorry for reacting the way I did. No, it was my fault, I said. What I said to you was mean and irresponsible. Mark, could you do me a favor and just shut up for a minute? I closed my trap and nodded. She took another deep breath. Mark, I had no right to act that way toward you. You were right, after a fashion. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, as they say. And you did only respond in kind. I'm not used to dealing with people the way I was. I'm not making excuses, you understand, but you know my history. I've always been isolated, either by circumstances or by choice. Everyone I care about leaves me, one way or the other. Elizabeth inhaled again, then exhaled audibly. Then you come along. The impossible man. At first I can't wait to talk to you. Then I'm afraid you'll come get me. Then I get afraid that you'll go away and I'll be alone again. It's all jumbled around in my head. At least when I was addicted to Adam, I had a convenient excuse. Now I don't even have that. She looked up at me. When I was 16 years old, I still believed in fairy tales. I believed in magic, in the power of good triumphing over evil. I believed in a just and fair universe. I didn't know then that I was being watched every moment of every day of my life, even every night. Then I became free, and through the love of a man, I became me, a person. I learned some hard lessons, and I walled myself up in a different tower, one I built myself, when you came along. And now I have nothing. Everything I knew and believed before was wrong. The only thing I know for certain, the part that scares me more than anything, is that I'm falling in love with you. My defenses are gone. Walls are torn down. She looked me in the eyes, those big, incredible blue eyes. All that's left for you is to do whatever you want. I'm so confused that That's when I pulled her close and kissed her. A warm, soft kiss, the kind I wanted to give her the moment I first confirmed her existence. I kissed her like that for a long time, held her close. I don't know how long I held her like that, but finally I looked down at her as she looked up at me questioningly. Elizabeth, I'm crazy about you. I've been that way ever since I first heard your voice. Everything I've seen and done since only makes me want you in my life even more. I'm with you, as long as you want me to be. I can't promise you it'll be a fairy tale. I can't promise you there won't be times when we'll get into arguments or even fights. I can't promise you a castle in the air. Sounds to me like you've had enough of that already. What I can, and will swear to you, is that I will love you for the rest of my life. And I'll stay with you, respect you, and let you be if you truly are, if you'll do the same for me. I stopped and thought to myself, where the hell did that come from? Since when did you start coming up with dialogue like that? Elizabeth smiled, and I realized she'd been crying. She shook her head and looked up into my eyes again. You impossible, impossible man, she murmured, then kissed me again. God, heaven itself couldn't be better than this. I sat down in the bathysphere looking at the two Elizabeth, one alive, one the other dead. We got everything we needed from this place. Everything we couldn't get anywhere else. She tucked her hand crossbow. We're only going to get one shot at this. I know, I smiled at her. But things had changed. Elizabeth nodded. Yes. At last. I threw the control switch forward. We were in for one very bumpy ride. Bioshock Part 8. Looks like the modified CO2 scrubbers are handling the extra load. Elizabeth looked up at me and nodded. We should be fine on the trip back. Okay. You seem a little distracted, Mark, Elizabeth said as she sat down and looked at me. I'm fine. I wasn't fine. I was still thrown off by some of her actions back in Housewares, and there was still the small matter of the dead version of the woman I loved curled up on one side of the bathysphere. I turned to look at her, and she was giving me her I'm not buying that for a second, mister, look. Okay, I'm not entirely fine, I admitted. Is it the body that looks like me? She asked, as if the subject were boring her to tears. We've been over this. Well, it's still unsettling. You'll pardon me if I'm not fond of anything that even suggests the idea you're no longer around. And then there's the other thing. What other thing? Where did you learn to vamp like that? You sure had me going a bit there, and I certainly didn't expect that kind of talk from someone who'd been a shut-in for most of her life. Well, if you must know, Mark, at one point it became clear to me that men could be influenced by a perception of a worldly woman who was aware of her own sexuality. She blushed furiously. I don't have the combat skills you or Booker had, so I had to rely on what was available to me. Did you ever? I asked. Her response was as immediate as it was indignant. Of course not. I've never... You know. Then how'd you know how to say and do all that? Eve's Garden and Cupid's Arrow. Both of these establishments had access to books I never saw in the libraries back in Columbia. Oh. So you just read about it. You never actually did it with anyone. I may know how to act like a trollop, Mark Jacobs, but make no mistake. It's exactly that. An act. She looked at me sideways, and I had a feeling I was about to find out how grilled salmon felt. Why some interest? She asked slowly. Well, yeah, there it was. Well, as long as we're laying our cards on the table, do let's. And we've got a long ride ahead of us. That we do. Yeah, she's not going to let this go easily, I can tell. Okay, I used to have this roommate in college who collected books like that. A roommate. Uh-huh. Hey, I'm trying to level with you here. This is embarrassing enough. Okay, when he was at classes or off with one of his many girls, I wasn't the most social of guys, and there were a few times when I looked. I caught the look she gave me. Hey, I was a young guy. I heard about the Kinsey reports. I wasn't the kind of guy girls normally chose to be around. So I was curious. I read some of those letters and books, and I was intimidated and curious at the same time. Girls actually did stuff like that? Thought about doing stuff like that? I shook my head. It took me a while to realize that most of these so-called letters from women were actually written by men. Hey, I was young and stupid, so there, my guilty secrets. Feel free to poke fun. She was silent for a while, then her expression became more relaxed. I'm afraid I have some distressing news for you. I am rapt with anticipation, I said in what I was sure was a sour tone. Believe it or not, women can enjoy sex too. It's a good thing this bathysphere was on automatic, because if I'd been driving, I would have steered some rocks right about that point. Huh? Mark, I know that your knowledge of women is a little stunted due to those books, but women have fantasies, too. And reading those books helped me understand that women do have desires, too, in very much the same way men do. Not exactly, but similar.
Really?
But before you start getting any ideas, Romeo, I am not going to have my first time experience in a semi-modified bathysphere. She held up a finger.
Are we clear?
Crystal. Besides, I'm definitely not up for a threesome or getting frisky while your twin sister is sitting there. I shuddered.
Elizabeth turned to the corpse and then back at me.
Thank you very much, Mark Jacobs. Just when I was no longer feeling unsettled by the presence of my lookalike, you figured out a way to resuscitate my initial discomfort.
Bravo.
You brought the idea up. I was just sitting here minding my own business.
Uh-huh.
He sat there in silence for several minutes and I asked,
So you have fantasies too, huh?
The moment has passed, Mark.
She gave me a look that clearly said, Thou shalt not bring up the subject of dead doppelgangers and the subject of physical intimacy at the same time.
Got it. Standard operating procedure. Open mouth, insert foot. Shouldn't I be worried that I was becoming accustomed to the taste of shoe leather?
Yeah, probably.
I never thought I'd be eager to hear Sandra Cullen's voice, but as we got into the home stretch, his voice came on the radio.
Well, you return. I hope you don't come back wanting.
I held a finger to my lips and said in a flat tone,
I got her body in the seat next to me, Cohen. I'd love to discuss in details, but I almost ran out of air on the trip over. I'm not trying to conserve oxygen.
Try not to take that tone with me. You may be an angel, but angels fall. And when they fall like lightning.
I didn't like the sound of that.
Signaled to Elizabeth to stand by the nitrous just in case Cohen had access to torpedoes. I wouldn't have put it past him to have another little episode like he did when he started ranting about the doubters. As it turned out, he was both silent and passive as we came in. I gestured to Elizabeth to stay down and stay silent. I didn't know what kind of microphones he had around the place, and I needed his complete focus on me long enough to put my plan into effect.
Well, it was sort of a plan. A desperate one.
When the bathysphere opened, I practically fell out of it, making a show of gasping for breath and looking around. I got to my feet, dusted myself off, went back to the bathysphere, and came out with my pack, my weapons, and carrying the body.
At last, the songbird, her wings finally clipped, the last part of my masterpiece. Tell me, what happened? How did you silence her?
I don't want to talk about it, Cohen, I said aloud.
Well, you will regardless. I want to know.
You got me to do your dirty work. Wasn't that enough?
I yelled back as I walked out of the metro station towards the atrium.
Nice and slow. Give Cohen a chance to ignore everything except the dog and pony show making its way towards his art. I must know. It will give purpose. Art is nothing without meaning and the means to articulate that meaning.
Fine. You must know, I had trouble finding her and hunting her down, so I had to lay a trap for her. Forced her to cross paths with a big daddy, and he did her in. Practically knocked her through a wall. Died on impact. I moved in front of the display, laying the body down, when I heard Cohen say, Wait. Oh, hell, the jig was up. Somebody wasn't sneaky enough for her. Show me her right hand. I reached down, showing her hand. With a thimble capping a slightly shortened pinky finger.
Yes. Now then, at last, get her picture and do it now!
I took the picture, trying to look more weary than I felt, and went to the pentaptic and put the photo into place. As soon as it was in and showing all five photos, there was a sudden burst of music and fanfare. I spun around to see Cohen, in person this time, walking down the stairs, taking his steps slowly.
It is accomplished,
he said joyously, looking in and murmuring over,
My God, my God, my God, it's beautiful.
I got a closer look at him. His face was heavily made up, but not so much that I could miss how it sagged. It looked like a rubber mask, three sizes too big for him. He had a painted little mustache on his face, and his hair was slicked back, trying to look presentable even though it was clear he'd been splicing for some time. He stood there admiring the presentation as if he'd done the dirty work, then turned to me. "You'll find your path to Ryan is now clear. Tell him that Sanders says hello." He smiled as he walked towards a chest bound with gold chain under glass. "You may avail yourself to one of my lesser works as a token of our time together. If you had proven worthy to become my disciple, you might have proven worthy of what's in the second chest. But who knows if such a person is even born?" He turned to me as he unlocked the chest and stood back. "Now, go." This was it. I walked to the chest and stopped and turned to him. "Mr. Cohen, before we part company, there's something I want to tell you. In fact, for words of such profound importance, I want to look you in the eyes as a man should." I dropped my weapons and packed to the ground. He stared at me as if seeing some new strange species of bird, then closed the distance, looking me in the eyes. "And what is this message of sorts, such fateful import?" I looked him in the eyes, then smiled slightly. "Sucker!" He blinked, confused, then yelped as he reached down, pulling out a tranquilizer dart. He looked up to see Elizabeth standing there, right next to her own corpse, her face harsh and vengeful. Sander tried to right himself, but I knew how powerful that drug was, and any thought he had of escape were too complex for his addled mind. He fell to the floor, looking up as he saw Rodriguez standing over him. "How?" he managed to whisper. Rodriguez stepped forward, drawing his gun. "I owe you a world of pain, Cohen." He stepped forward to shoot, but I held up a hand. "No. I've got a better idea." I took off my gloves and put my hand on the side of his face, feeling that tingling sensation again. "What are you doing to him?" Rodriguez asked. "I'm curing him." I stood back up. "Is there a place we can lock him up?" Rodriguez nodded, rubbing his neck. "Yeah. I suppose I should thank you for letting me live." "Well, I never wanted you dead in the first place. Just glad you took the hint. And that seltzer tablet. Helped sell the whole foaming at the mouth due to poison bit, and got him to forget about you." "You cured him? Like me? Is that why my head's clear?" "Right in one, Rodriguez." "Can I rely on you?" Rodriguez nodded. "I'm your man." "Good. Rodriguez, this is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, this is Rodriguez, the new mayor of Fort Frolic." "Pleasure to meet you," she said politely, shaking his hand with her left while holding the hand crossbow with the right. "Pleasure's mine. So you sure you just want him locked up? God knows he deserves far worse." "Maybe, but that's not up to me. Besides, he'll be a paper tiger very soon. Locking him up is sufficient. Of course, if you decide to play some music he might not particularly like over the PA system, I'm sure it won't violate his rights much." "What'd you have in mind?" Elizabeth asked. I shrugged. "Got any Hank Williams? Elvis Presley?" Rodriguez blinked. "Who's Elvis Presley?" I groaned inwardly. "Philistines! Never mind, just keep him locked up but unhurt. And keep the jamming up. I don't want Ryan to figure out Fort Frolic's changed hands." Rodriguez nodded and lifted up Sanders' body, walking off with him to one of the stores to lock him up. I sighed and sat down on the steps. My hands were shaking. Elizabeth came over and sat next to me. "You did it. Another part of Rapture's safe now, and more of the little sisters have been saved. You should be happy." "I would be, if I actually had a solution to the main problem. The medical pavilion's a mess, but salvageable. Neptune's bounty is a bunch of boats waiting to go fishing. Arcadia is providing oxygen for everybody, even though it's on lockdown. And Fort Frolic isn't a priority, it's just a place for recreation. For now, I haven't hit any targets that Ryan can't afford to lose. We, aren't a real threat to him yet. But sooner or later, we're going to end up stinging him in a way he can't or won't ignore, and then he's going to do exactly what he always does when he runs into something he doesn't understand or can't control. He'll destroy it." "How?" "Every person Every person in charge of a specific area has a genetic key, giving them absolute control over the area. Ryan has the means to lock down our sections of Rapture and use the security systems to assassinate and control people. What do you suppose are the odds that one of those things Ryan has in his bag of tricks is a self-destruct system to take out Rapture completely? Elizabeth considered. As abhorrent as the idea is, it does sound exactly like something he'd do. So none of this will matter if he can blow us all to hell using his genetic key. And I'm out of ideas. I put my head in my hands. All this time, people think I've got a plan? What a joke. Mark, stop. In case you haven't noticed, you're not doing this on your own anymore. Right, sorry. I just wish I had an idea. Elizabeth smiled. You won't need one, because I just got one. I'm all ears. Remember when I was locked up and I took to studying locks in order to figure out a way to leave the tower? Yeah, why? I learned many things about keys, and about locks. Ryan's genetic key is on his person, but we can't get to it. Maybe we don't have to get access to the key. We just need access to the lock, and change it so that the key won't work with it. I raised my head. Well, how do we do that? Well, the lock isn't a conventional lock. Ryan inserts his key into a device that reads the data off the key and compares it to data that is stored in a data bank. If the data on the key matches what's in the data bank, then he's given access to whatever functions he needs. A gene sequence needed to make a match contains hundreds of thousands of bits of data. A lock with regular tumblers wouldn't be sufficient. It would need to access secure data. And that means the thinker. I've been hearing about this thinker all the time, getting bits and pieces ever since I came here. From what I understand, it's a computing machine, capable of calculations so fast and numerous that no human being could possibly keep up with it. The computing machine is capable of handling every automated process in Rapture. Babbage is a legacy. Not Babbage. The thinker is the product of a man named Charles Milton Porter. He designed the thinker. When Adam was discovered, Charles found the need to use Adam in a chemical process designed to increase the thinker's already considerable processing power. You make it sound like it actually thinks for itself now. Elizabeth nodded. It may well do so at that. Well, where is the thinker? Located in Minerva's den. The entire structure is for the sole purpose of housing the thinker and all the personnel in charge. Rumor has it Charles fell in with Fontaine and Ryan and had him imprisoned. But from what I've heard, Charles, he wasn't the type. And the thinker is now in the hands of Dr. Reed Wall, Charles' assistant. Yeah, that doesn't exactly scream coincidence. What do you know about Wall? Not much, only that he's been obsessed with predictive algorithms. I nodded. Sounds like another Adam addict. That means he's going to be trouble. Maybe we better talk to this Porter guy. He sounds like somebody much more reasonable. That means contacting Persephone. And that means contacting Sinclair. Elizabeth didn't exactly look pleased with the idea. Yeah, I've heard of Sinclair. Dr. Langford knows him pretty well. Maybe this is a conversation we need to bring her in on. Dr. Julie Langford? Elizabeth asked in confirmation. Yes, and don't look at me for like that. Julie offered to work for me when Ryan tried to kill her. Figures I'd be a lot easier to work for. There's nothing going on between us except a professional relationship. That's all. Oh, really? Anything else I should know? She asked, far too sweetly for me to be comforted. Well, remember when I told you about having to shower off the toxin after I saved her life? Elizabeth's eyes went wide. Are you saying that you and Julie showered together? No, of course not. We absolutely did not shower together. We were both in separate stalls the whole time. Oh, she considered. That didn't sound too bad. Well, the stalls weren't exactly opaque. She stopped and slowly turned to me. Transparent? Don't look at me! I didn't build them and I was covered in toxin. My options weren't exactly multiplying. And how close were these stalls? She saw me naked, okay? I didn't want it. I didn't plan it. It happened. There, now you know everything. I waited for a tirade of indignance, but nothing came. I slowly turned to look at Elizabeth. She didn't seem angry, but she did look put out. Look, it wasn't anything. It was just about surviving. That's all. She nodded. All right. I can accept that. She stood up a little stiffly. Let's go see Dr. Langford. The trip to Arcadia was slightly tense. I couldn't understand why Elizabeth was irritated with me, and I was afraid to ask. I figured that a powwow with Langford might help clear the air. At least I hoped it would. The idea of having to deal with Elizabeth looking daggers at Julie, and Julie, well, being Julie, did not sound like a particularly serene scenario. We stopped at the doors to Arcadia, and I looked up at the camera. Before I could speak, Julie's face came on the screen and says, "Well, Mr. Jacobs, I have to hand it to you. Not only did you finally cause the curtains to fall on Sander Cohen, but you picked up a few friends as well." "Mind letting us in, Julie?" I asked. "Sure. Releasing the lockdown at the metro station now." The door cycled open and a blast of fresh air greeted us both. Elizabeth sighed blissfully at the scent of fresh air. Trees and flowers hit us both. As we entered, Julie Langford came down to greet us. "Yep. New dress and makeup. This was not going to be fun." "Hey, didn't we see you on a record cover?" she asked as she saw Elizabeth. "Dr. Julie Langford. Elizabeth DeWitt. Elizabeth DeWitt, Dr. Julie Langford, the person in charge of Arcadia and of keeping it alive." "Charmed. Please come in. Place is nice, but it's a little lonely at the moment." Julie headed back to the labs and we followed. "You'll be happy to know, boss, that the Arcadia and the farmer's market are now completely secure and reporting no blockages or circulation issues. Plus, I've been talking with Sinclair about reopening the old Atlantic Express lines. Not as direct as bathysphere travel, but more likely to go unnoticed." "Good, because we need to talk to Sinclair." "Certainly eager to negotiate. I'll get him in the line, patch him through the sea lines. Hold on." As Julie went to the control panel, Elizabeth walked up next to me. "So, she certainly seems like she's pleased to be working under you." I turned to look at her. "Please tell me you're just being catty for comedic effect." "I'm just a little irritated at her. Please. Don't tell me you're acting like this because she's seen me undress and you haven't." "Don't be absurd," she asked. Well, she said, a little too quickly. Julie looked up. "I've got him on the line. Put on the squawk box." The speaker and mic nearby clicked and I heard Sinclair. He had a southern good old boy twang to his voice, but I ignored that. I figured I wouldn't be the first person he tried to persuade while sounding like a rube. "Well, well, an honest to goodness celebrity. I've been waiting to talk to you for some time." "I bet. New player in town. Action suggests he's likely to upset an apple cart or two. So it would certainly help getting ahead of the game, wouldn't it?" "Why, sir, you're making some rather aggressive assumptions, aren't you? Certainly suggests you think I'm capable and partial to ulterior motives." I smiled. "Perish the thought. Sinclair, I know you're in charge of Persephone and that you got most of the undesirables on ice down there. I want to talk to one of them. Charles Milton Porter." "That may be somewhat difficult. I'm afraid Mr. Porter is unavailable." "Define unavailable." "I'm afraid that Mr. Porter became one of the test subjects when we released the new Alpha series Big Daddies. He's currently designated Subject Sigma and was placed in cold storage at..." "Stop! Stop? Right there. Are you telling me that you took one of the greatest minds in Rapture and turned him into a stupid Big Daddy?" A terrible thought occurred to me. "How many others imprisoned in Persephone ended up as test subjects?" "Now, sport, don't fly off the handle. The Alpha series were discontinued when the new series came out long ago, so there's no use crying over milk spilled years ago. Besides, if you're looking for blame, there's plenty to spread around. When Dr. Lamb became a guest here in Persephone, she helped keep the inmates calmed down and selected the ones that would ultimately be made into test subjects." I didn't want to hear any more. I was starting to feel physically ill from what Sinclair was calmly telling me. As if all there needed was a few mea culpas and that would be it, all would be forgiven. I wanted to say something I knew would upset him, just to satisfy my sense of moral outrage, but I kept calm. Somehow. "Where's Porter?" "If I had to hazard a guess, sport, I'd say close to Minerva's Den. There's a cold storage station down there. Porter never went through the Are there any other Alpha series still intact? I said, interrupting him.
Only one of note, but he's damaged goods. Subject Delta, the girl you rescued, Eleanor Lamb?
Eleanor was Delta's little sister.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Sinclair, I'm going to have to contact you later. Julie, switch him off.
I sat down heavily in a chair.
Thanks. If I had to listen to him for very much longer, I was going to end up punching the hell out of something. Probably hard enough to injure my hand. Hell's bells! How could he do something like that? Just when I thought this place couldn't get any worse.
Mark, calm down, Elizabeth said gently.
You don't get it. This is me being calm.
I took a deep breath.
Excuse me, ladies. I'm going to need a few moments alone.
I stood up and walked out of the lab, heading for the rolling hills. I need to lay out, calm down, think straight. I was hacked off and I was of no use to anyone like this. I found a quiet spot in the rolling hills and lay back on the grass. It was helping somewhat, and I risked closing my eyes. Everything was spinning around in my head, and I was getting that Alice through the Looking Glass feeling again. A whole city. And Ryan was still running the show. Everything was looking like it was hinging on the thinker in Minerva's den. That meant finding Porter, since it didn't look like Dr. Wall would be interested in helping anyone but himself and the thinker. But how cooperative was Porter going to be as...
A big daddy! That's it! Holy mother of peanut butter!
I ran back to tell Elizabeth and Julie the good news. As I entered the lab, I heard them talking and stopped, not wanting to interrupt. After all, if they start to get along, this could only get better.
It's so annoying at times when he does that, Julie was saying.
Wait a second.
I know. It's like he feels he has to do everything himself, Elizabeth said in return. When is he going to learn that he's not alone in this anymore?
I don't know. Men, what are you going to do? At least he looks like he's good for other things.
Oh, that's right. You saw him without clothes on, didn't you? Elizabeth asked, her tone slightly sour.
Oh, honey, did I ever. You're a lucky girl, let me tell you.
You must have the tightest rump in Rapture.
What do you mean, I'm a lucky girl?
Oh, stop with the jealous girlfriend routine. It doesn't take a PhD to realize a man is completely besotted by you.
Honestly, I don't know why you need to be jealous in the first place. I'm 10 years his senior, and I prefer my partners to have a little experience.
What's with the makeup and the dress?
Oh, child, a woman wants to look nice for a man at times. I mean, look at you. You've let yourself go a bit, and I'm sure you'd appreciate it if you had a little blush, some lipstick.
Julie, I'm not going to doll myself up to get his attention. I want to respect him for my mind, not just desire my body.
Honey, who says you have to choose one or the other? Elizabeth inhaled sharply to retort, then stopped.
Julie smiled. You two are a pair, you know that? Both gone through situations that would have broken the minds of lesser people. Strong-willed. But he has the advantage of being more socially experienced, where you spend a great deal of time trying to blend in. But even though he's smart, you're smarter than he is. And smart, beautiful women practically turn him into a lobotomite. Especially since he's falling for you and only you. If I walked by him right now wearing only what I'm wearing under this dress, he'd give me all the attention of a man watching someone plumb a toilet.
Then what do you expect me to do?
For one thing, stop being jealous of any woman that looks at him sideways. He only has eyes for you, so stop punishing him for it.
I do not, Elizabeth stopped.
It wouldn't be so bad if he didn't keep making mistakes.
He's a young man, Elizabeth. Making mistakes is what good young men are good at. But he's shown that he learns from his mistakes, hasn't he?
Next point. I know you haven't exactly been on the best terms with men.
That may be the biggest understatement in the history of spoken language.
But don't let your experiences with them color how you treat him. He's not like the others.
He couldn't be.
All the same, you seem to fall back into old habits when it comes to him. Stop assuming he's like the other men.
You know, you act like you've had a lot of experiences with men, Julie.
I didn't spend all of my time in labs or working for the War Department. In fact, being a female scientist who happens to look as good as I do, I've had more than my share of experiences with men. Good and bad. You're good at surviving. Now you need to spend some time trying to live.
Okay, I'd listen to that. I went back to the front door, closed it loudly, then walked in the room.
I think of it all, I have an idea on how we can help Porter.
Everything okay?
Of course, Mark. Just girl talk.
Elizabeth and Julie looked at each other and smiled. I couldn't help but feel a little worried at that sight. What's your idea? Well, a portal was changed into a big daddy. That means Adam had to have been used in the conversion, correct? Maybe there's a chance I can bring him back if I cure him of the Adam treatments. If I can do that, maybe I'll help with the Thinker to prevent Ryan from turning Rapture into the next lost city of Atlantis. Maybe, if he doesn't help. Then we have to find another way. Come on, Julie, don't look at me like that. I can't force him to help us. I'm not Ryan. I walked out to get my things to load up. Where's Minerva's den from Arcadia? Fast way, check the metro. Bathysphere will get you there in a few minutes. But that lad's still locked down by Ryan. Julie looked back at us from her desk. Give me an hour. I can see if I can get it unlocked. Now, I'm not sure if we've got that kind of time. If Ryan realizes what we're trying to do, is there any other way to get there? Yes. A trolley route can get you there in 30 minutes. Passes Ryan University and the carnival, but it'll get you to Minerva's den. You'll have to be careful, though. I have no idea whether those ideas are populated by splicers or by normal people. Mark, if there's normal people in those areas, why not send them back to Arcadia? Elizabeth suggested. I'm sure they'd be happy to work on clearing out the farmer's market and work the fields there to get fresh food and water available. I hadn't thought about that. Brilliant idea. Julie, we're going to see if we can send you a workforce. You should still have full access to the security bots, so make sure that you're reminded to them about who's in charge of gentle ones. If you insist, it'll be worth it to get the farms managed and people fed, if they're not spliced up. I checked the map, and I think I know where to go from Minerva's den. I looked up to see Julie staring at me. Aren't we feeling optimistic about our chances? Where, oh peerless leader, should we go next? I put a fingertip on Fontaine Futuristics. There. Elizabeth looked at the map. Of course. Any arrangements Fontaine would have made for his smuggling contacts would have had to have been locked up somewhere he knew would be safe, but not too close to his base of operations, but close enough for him to get to it in a hurry. And if we get that information, we can make contact with the ship coming by to pick Fontaine up. And tell them what? I haven't got the foggiest idea. I noticed that Elizabeth was staring at me. Oh, come on, Elizabeth. I'm making this up as I go along. If you think I've got some sort of master plan, you've got a lot of more faith in me than I do. I know. I know you didn't plan to come down here, and you've been jumping through hoops ever since you came through the Welcome Center, but what do you want to do? What do I want? Huh. You know, it's the first time since I've come to Rapture since anybody's asked me that. Everybody here has told me about what they want or need. I thought about it. I want to leave Rapture. I hate this place more than I can possibly describe. It's a place full of wonders, and the biggest wonder is why the people here haven't completely destroyed each other yet. I sighed again. I want to save the little sisters. I even want to save the big daddies and the other splicers, get them out from under Ryan's control. I want to get back to the surface, see my family again, and introduce you to them. I want to get married, have a family, get a regular job, one where I don't have to kill anyone. I want to have a home with a front and a backyard. I want to spend my weekends mowing the lawn, going to church, having a backyard barbecue, maybe having a cold beer for crying out loud. I turned to Elizabeth, blushing as I realized at some point I started to raise my voice to a yell. Sorry, I guess I got carried away there. It's been frustrating being here. I'm preaching to the choir, aren't I? I smiled just a little. It really felt good being able to say that. Now, Mark, what do you need to do? I need to save as many people as I can in Rapture. Thanks to the genetic changes made in my body, I have the only means of reversing the effects of Adam, which means I've got a responsibility to do so. So until Tenenbaum can replicate the effects in something or someone else, I'm it. And, of course, I need to stay alive long enough to help Tenenbaum with the cure and keep Ryan from blowing everything and everyone to a watery grave. I sighed. Did I miss anything? Yes. Stay alive for me, because I've gotten used to the idea of having you around, Mr. Mark Jacobs, and I want to keep it that way. Elizabeth tapped me on the nose with a finger, smirking a little. Understood? I found myself smiling back. Understood. So don't you go dying on me, Elizabeth DeWitt. Once was enough. Don't remind me, Elizabeth responded. Oh, for God's sake, you two, will you just kiss already? I thought we were in a hurry. Julie called out from her lab. That sounded like an excellent idea, so that's exactly what I did. Started out as a soft, brief kiss on the lips, but Elizabeth had other ideas, wrapping her arms around my neck and kissing me a little harder and a lot longer. We parted at last. She exhaled and smiled softly. That was nice. Yeah. Come on, let's get out of here. We got a long and unsure road ahead. Lead the way. Julie, I said in the radio. Exit road is clear. Releasing lockdown. Good luck, you two. As the doors opened, revealing a wide cobbled street with trolley tracks, I lifted my modified Tommy gun. Once more into the breach, dear friends. Elizabeth blinked. I'm impressed. I didn't know you knew Shakespeare's Henry V. Well, don't be too impressed. That's pretty much all I remember of the play. That and the Crispin speech. It sounded too impressive to forget. She was silent for a time, then said, Let me hear it. Oh, come on, you probably know it better than I do. It's been years. It's a long walk to the university. Give it a try. Oh, all right. But no laughing. I hear so much as a giggle, and I'm stopping right there. I took a deep breath. But you gotta start me off with Westmoreland's line. Fair enough, Elizabeth said, then in a deeper voice. Oh, now that we had here but 1/10,000 of those men in England that do no work today. I smiled, the words coming back to me. What's he that wishes so? My cousin, Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin, if we are marked to die, we are now to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. I started feeling it, that feeling I got reading it over and over in English literature, thinking about the scene in my head. By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I who doth feed upon my cost. It yearns me not if men my garments wear. Such outward things dwell not in my desires. But if it be a sin to covet honor, I am the most offending soul alive. No faith my cause, wish not a man from England. I thought I'd have trouble remembering the words, but as I went on, the words kept coming as easy to remember as my own name. God's peace, I would not lose so great an honor as one man more, methinks, would share for me for the best hope I have. Oh, do not wish one more. Rather proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach for this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispin. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand a tiptoe when this day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispin. He that shall live this day and see old age will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, Tomorrow is Saint Crispin. Then he will strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, These wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in his mouth as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. I'd forgotten how good it felt to say those words, words that inspired armies and heroes alike. I don't think I would have stopped if someone had shot me. This story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be ne'er so vile. This day shall gentle his condition, and gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst any speaks that fought with us on St. Crispin's Day. I stopped both talking and walking as I saw the signpost up ahead. Next stop, Ryan University. I could feel the words draining out of me, feeling myself become just me again. Well, Elizabeth, you made it through the whole thing without laughing. I turned to look at her, and she was looking up at me, eyes glistening. Great. I must have sounded worse than I thought if she wanted to laugh so hard she was crying. Let me guess. My voice cracked. My tone was off. I sounded weird. The acoustics were... Mark, that was amazing. Of all the responses I expected her to give me, that one wasn't even in the top 100. Run that one past me again? I listened to you and felt how much the words inspired you. It gave me chills listening to you, Mark. You should really consider spending some time on stage. Well, I'm only good with that speech. Have you honestly tried any others? You have a compelling voice when you want to use it. Maybe even to lead.
I couldn't believe it. You're serious.
Really? Elizabeth nodded. I'd follow you. I scoffed. You and Langford. Me? A leader? You clearly never saw me during my classes or my experiences in London. I couldn't lead ants to a picnic. Maybe only show it when push comes to shove. Consider. I stopped as we reached the university. The building was majestic, to say the least, but the once manicured grounds were overgrown and there was evidence the war had come even to this place of learning. No more pencils, no more books, no more teachers' dirty looks. What do you think? Elizabeth said, looking at the main doors leading into the building. Probably empty. After all, when the war came, families probably pulled their kids out of school to keep them home and safe. No sooner were the words out of my mouth did a young man appear out of nowhere, dressed in a ratty football uniform, and look at us with a wicked smile on his face. Then he disappeared again, Houdini splicer style. I sighed and raised my machine gun. Elizabeth? Yes, Mark? I could feel her tensing behind me. I am really getting tired of being wrong all the damn time.